Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this, the March 10th, 2020 meeting of the Education Finance Division. I want to start by thanking all of you who attended Friday's Education Symposium. It was, I think, as promised, a bold and clear look at racial disparities in Minnesota's education system in particular, although we did appropriately look outside the education system because, of course, the kids come from outside the education system. But the national context that was provided by a couple of our speakers, I thought, was particularly useful looking at what are promising initiatives in other states that we can take another look at. One of those that came up several times was the concept of full-service community schools. The language, I think, differs a little bit around the country. Some of them call them community schools. That tends to mean something else here in Minnesota. Some of them call them full-service community schools because of the organic partnerships with community providers and others that are developed. But it appears to be one of those strategies that's seen as effective in better serving students, better serving families, and responding to the racial disparities that we have in particular here in Minnesota, but certainly is an issue across the country. So today is about looking at the full service community school model as it's currently being practiced across the state. With that, I'll start by saying, and I think it's true, that Duluth is here. All right, very good. So I'm looking for Ryan Kamerschik. I'm sure I did that wrong. Kazmierczyk. Thank you, sir. And Rachel Thapa? Nope. So, welcome to the committee. The routine here is you start by introducing yourself. Don't be afraid of the microphone. The sound, we got some technical issues with the sound quality here, and we want to be able to hear you. Introduce yourself for the committee, and then proceed after I call on Representative Murphy. Good morning, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, so much. I thought my guilt from not fully attending your Friday service made you forget that I wanted to say a few remarks beforehand.
My apologies.
That's okay. I take liberties. And I did tune into part of that very motivational meeting all day. I tuned in between meetings. But full-service community schools, as I know it, has been in School District 709 for a generation now, a generation of school kids. And for the first time, we have kids that went through the elementary program, full-service community schools, went through the elementary program, went through the middle school program, and now they're in high school. And those kids have made a difference on all the kids in the Duluth School District, because they found out over the years and in this generation that it works, that having integrated student support systems, integrated family support systems from daycare persons all the way through grandma and great grandma, and the county and the city and the school district working together to provide these support systems, makes a total difference in the whole school district. And change takes place because the achievement gap is lessened and the graduation rates are increasing. And now they're collecting data too. And so I'm sure you're gonna hear that today. But also one of the things, other things, that this is so important to continue funding so that the waiting list can dwindle down for the persons that are the coordinators of the programs, the educators that take on the role of being the coordinator to work with the city and work with the county and work with the families and work with the church groups and work with the League of Women Voters and reach out into every aspect of the community on behalf of the kids that are in the full service community school program are the ones that are the most important. And that those coordinators are what's the core of making the whole program work. And today's, this is an exciting agenda too. And this is, you'll find out that no one program works everywhere, but it's called the same thing. And the kids are all different, but the kids are all benefiting in a different way. And it is making a difference. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. One of the things that I do appreciate, to your point, that none of the programs look exactly the same, even if they're called the same thing. One of the things that I value is the organic nature of the program in each community. It engages and empowers that school community to identify what its needs are and how best to meet those, which, as you imply at least, may be different than the next school community.
That's great. And Mr. Chair, I did, even on the bonding tours this fall that we took, there were areas of where we were there for another reason, but educators would say, if we could only have the opportunity to apply again for a coordinator so we could become a full-fledged based school, we would like that opportunity. So go for it, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Mr. Komarczyk, welcome again.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, and committee members for having us. I'm here representing Duluth Public Schools as the principal at Lincoln Park Middle School. My name is Brian Kazmierczyk, and I have been at Lincoln Park for about 6 months. So I appreciate Representative Murphy's kind words about our full-service community school. Although I am not a new principal, I am new to Lincoln Park and the community school. Our full-service community school has provided me a greatest learning curve and for me as a leader. My message to the staff as we started the school year is that our school needs to be an opportunity, not a barrier. For many of our families, they face barriers, and our full-service community school purpose is to reduce academic and non-academic barriers. No community school is the same. We use evidence-based strategies to meet the needs of our students and families, engaging them as assets and into addressing the barriers that they face. Lincoln Park Middle School is in a community that recognizes the needs of our school families, and as a full service community school, we are a conduit to resources for the families and students. Taking a holistic approach to meet our students' needs, we partner with community organizations, St. Louis County, local colleges, and neighborhood organizations to connect services specific to social emotional needs, mental health support, medical needs, food disparities, and academic supports. The financial support through legislation makes a tremendous statement to recognize one of the best strategies to be opportunities and to remove barriers for families in our state, and especially our families in Duluth. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Thapa?
It's Tapa, thank you.
Tapa, my apologies. Please, proceed.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Rachel Tapa, and I am the community school coordinator at Lincoln Park Middle School in Duluth. I'm here on behalf of our school district and our Duluth Community School Collaborative. I've been at Lincoln Park Middle School for 4 years, and prior to that was at our elementary community school site since I was in college, so I've grown up with community schools. So as Brian shared, community schools are an evidence-based and holistic approach to reducing academic and non-academic barriers faced by our students and families. My job as a community school coordinator is to be a connector, and it involves having knowledge of resources and needs, as well as developing the relationships and trust to build partnerships to improve outcomes. So I'm going to tell you a brief story about a school food pantry that's not really a story about a school food pantry. So we've had interest from our community, expressed needs by our families, that food insecurity is a real need in our school. And I have a student who I knew from elementary school who made some concerning statements to a counselor on a Friday in February. He said, "I wish I was dead." She knew I had a connection with this kid, and I tried to get him to talk with me. He wasn't ready, but I knew him from elementary school. I knew he had been involved in the backpack program through Second Harvest as a leader. And I also knew data from St. Louis County Public Health that shows food insecurity, mental health, and youth substance use as our, and I'm sorry, this is from the community health needs assessment by our health systems, that shows those are priority areas, and there's a strong correlation between food insecurity and mental health outcomes, including twice as high rates of depression for kids experiencing food insecurity and over three times as high of rates of suicidal ideation or suicidal thoughts. So I connected with this kid and said, "Can you help me with something?" And it was genuine. He helped me figure out how to organize our food pantry. He shared he was experiencing some food insecurity. We had a winter break coming up, and we were able to have a church that had a planned food drive for us that weekend, and we were able to send food home with him that same day when it was delivered to my office on Monday by our principal. He has since referred other kids. We did also address his mental health and those needs and did a risk assessment and said, got him connected to some other supports. So I think just it's all of this is really connected, and if we can address kids, the barriers that they're facing, whether that's food, whether that's mental health, or anything else, it will help kids feel safe and cared for and better able to focus on learning. And as I said at the beginning of the story, it's not about a food pantry, but it's about having the knowledge, relationships, and trust to make the necessary connections to improve kids' well-being. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Tappa. Ms. Tappa, the site coordinator to me seems to be the mystery here. What do you do every day?
Wow, what do I do every day? No day is the same. I mean, the main job is to, I think it's a lot of listening to people and building trust and relationships. That's the main thing. And then it's also being aware of what our needs are in the school or in the community, what are the priorities, and then what are the resources? Because it's kind of being a connector or a matchmaker of whatever those things happen to be in your context. So for us, the food has come up recently. I have built partnerships with colleges to provide a STEM learning camp. And after that program, I think it was 90% of the kids who participated in that program said that that program helped them see that going to college was for them and they could do it. I've helped with transportation advocacy. We are becoming a restorative practice and a trauma-informed schools. And so just helping write grants for that. So it's really, I think probably if you ask any coordinator here, our day-to-day looks different, but it's building relationships with kids, with their families, with our school staff, with the community, and then helping to build the trust, but also the logistics to make those partnerships be as effective as possible.
Any other questions for our friends here from Duluth? Seeing none, thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Rochester. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
So I have Kayla Allen from the Mayo Clinic. I'm guessing that's you.
That's me.
All right. You just want to introduce yourself, proceed, and then we're always pleased to have students before this committee. So Mr. Nguyen and Ms. Hernandez, welcome. Ms. Allen.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Kayla Allen, and I'm the registered nurse school health program coordinator from Mayo Clinic, Rochester. Over the last 3 years, Mayo's clinic's relationship with schools has strengthened thanks to the outreach of full-service community schools program. It has been proven that education and health outcomes can be dependent on each other. Children who are healthy are more prepared to learn, and those who are successful with their education are healthier. Children served by full-service community schools face barriers of healthcare for various reasons. Last week, Mayo Clinic and one of our full-service community schools celebrated its one-year anniversary of a school-based health clinic. The aim of the clinic is to meet students where they are and decrease barriers to care. This academic year, the clinic has served 120 students and prevented 15 student emergency department visits. By having clinic services available, 54 student contact days have been gained. Beyond the school-based clinic, we are working on developing a communication tool that could be utilized between the healthcare team and school when a student is discharged from a psychiatric hospitalization to re-enter the school. The clinic, in collaboration with our other community partners, is also coordinating an STI screening event for students this spring. Other highlights of the partnership include providing the flu vaccine to students while at school, mental health support, supportive education, innovation with regards to assisting students with barriers to care, and connecting students to healthcare homes. Mayo Clinic is committed to serving the community needs. We value the opportunity to collaborate with our schools to invest in outcomes of students who will likely become the adults of our community. Full service community schools provide an opportunity to come together and have a collective impact on students and families. The word collaboration is key in the full service community school model. By bringing our expertise together, we will surpass what any group could do alone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nguyen, are you up next?
Yes.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Lap Nguyen. I am a senior from John Marshall High School in Rochester, Minnesota. It is with great pleasure and profound honor that I have the opportunity to speak about the benefits of full-service community schools in front of this panel today. As a first-generation immigrant from Vietnam, the community resources provided to students like myself were something that my parents relied on. I recall the overwhelming relief of my parents when I was able to get my dental care taken care of for free at my elementary school and bring home extra food for the weekend from the backpack program provided by our local food shelf. These are the things that helped my family get through the early years. So when I heard that there was an even more expansive program of fully integrated community schools, I could not help but be a strong proponent. Although my family and I no longer rely on the resources mentioned above, it doesn't take much effort to encounter those within my school who still do. John Marshall High School, like most schools within the state of Minnesota, is one that lies at the fulcrum between those with high socioeconomic standings and those with more modest income, which can really impact what resources and experiences kids and families have access to. In the past, I have witnessed this in the form of stigmatization against those who utilize our food pantry, whereas the Rocket Community Room of today is one where students are happy to support one another and raise awareness about such a valuable resource. This is largely thanks to the push towards making John Marshall a full-service community school. More than just providing resources, the program has shifted the culture of the school into one that is more understanding, inviting, and inclusive. A dedicated advisor like Ms. Vasquez goes a long way in normalizing the usage of community resources. Additionally, the transition of John Marshall into a full-service community school has helped connect students, such as EL students who just came to the United States, who would normally be afraid to access resources within the community at large, to those resources that they need. Right now, John Marshall is undertaking a comprehensive needs assessment around the four pillars of community school programming. We are gathering input from our stakeholders in the community that will help us identify and prioritize our needs. And as we begin to have targeted efforts to support them, we will track our progress over time to see what the impact is for our students and our families. And by incorporating expanded servicing on multiple fronts into the school community, students are more likely to utilize these resources. These are just a few things that I've noticed over the last year as our school has made the transition into a full-service community school. The positive impact it has on our community is immeasurable. And for many students, they feel more included in the school at large. And so I sincerely hope that my testimony today will help you vote for the expansion of this valuable resources for the students of tomorrow. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Ms. Hernandez, welcome.
Good morning, Chair and Committee members. My name is Jocelyn Hernandez, and I'm a student at the Rochester Alternative Learning Center Full Service Community School. I want to share with you how the ALC has impacted my life. Before I came to ALC, I did not feel welcomed at school. I was going through mental health issues and did not have resources to help me. I'd given up on school and was seriously planning on dropping out. My mom found out about the ALC, and I tried it out instead of giving up. Having the on-site Mayo Clinic, resource room, mental health supports, use of the shower, and accessing therapy has made a huge difference for me. I've gotten way more help in a short amount of time than I honestly have in my whole life. I've never had this many resources within my grasp. I've used the resource room many times, and the clinic has helped with my sexual health. Resources at other schools are very limited, and I'd grown up without much privilege. This school feels like home and has helped me see that I want to pursue my education. I know now that I want to go to college and major in early childhood development due to the job shadowing I was able to do through my school. I've even joined the student voice and choice team at ALC and now take actions to improve my school. I hope you will consider how full-service community schools has impacted me and many of my fellow students that are in very similar situations, as there have been an additional 30 job shadows this school year, more than 50% of seniors with an exit plan, and about 10 to 20 students each day using the resource room. Funding for community schools matters. Thank you for taking the time to hear my story.
Thank you very much. Questions for our friends from Rochester? Seeing none. Nope. Not, apparently not seeing. Representative Sandstead, my apologies.
No, I was kind of late on the draw. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hernandez, did you mention access to a shower in what you just said?
Ms. Hernandez?
Yes.
Representative Sandstead.
I appreciate that so very much. I think sometimes members at this committee table have heard of some things, common themes that are bubbling up in terms of food insecurity and mental health, and those are some of the common things that we hear about and how full-service community schools are addressing it. But that little statement just really shines a light on what our student population looks like when they come into the classroom, and there are so many needs, and each school has needs that look so significantly different. I appreciate even saying access to a shower is one of the things that makes a difference in the lives of our students. And I thought that was courageous and very insightful. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. With that, thank you very much. Appreciate your coming up today. Dear River. Superintendent, welcome. I can tell you you've got a big fan in the Blandin Foundation.
Well, great.
That's
good to hear.
They mentioned you on Friday when they were good enough to come down. We held a day-long symposium on racial disparities in education in Minnesota and invited the Blandin Foundation to provide a greater Minnesota viewpoint on that. And they've spoke very highly of you and the accomplishments at Deer River. So if you want to lead off, welcome to the committee. As you've seen, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you. And good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Matt Gross. I'm the superintendent of Deer River Public Schools, but I'm in a unique spot because I'm also the superintendent in Nashwauk K-12. Keewatin Schools. Deer River, I've been there for 14 years, 3 years in Nashwauk, Keewatin, Representative Sansi's district, and that gives me a really unique perspective. I represent a school district today that has had a full-service community schools program in place and one that doesn't, and it's not because of need, it's because of opportunity, it's because of funding. As a superintendent, one of the questions that I get asked is this the school's job to be doing these things? And our full-service community schools model in Deer River has shined a light on the fact that this isn't about whose job it is. It's about a job that needs to get done. We're talking about kids needing showers, for instance, and if they show up in the morning not clean and without clothes that are going to work for the day, that's the wrong question. There's no lineup of entities or people standing to meet the needs of these children and these families. And unfortunately, the needs we're talking about, highlighted again, are needs that Maslow said are at the very basic level of humanity. These are physiological needs like being clean, having food, having warm clothes, and then moving up into belongingness and security. And we're not talking about really extreme needs. We're talking about basic human needs. A story that I'll share with you that represents this, we had a single mother come and enroll her two children in our school district in Deer River. This was a mother that was new to us, new to our community, and she and her children had many challenges in front of her and in front of them. And she left that day not just with her children enrolled, but she left with two children who had backpacks full of school supplies. She also left with insurance, because our full-service community schools coordinator had lined up an insurance navigator to be there. And so her first impression with us as a school system was a school system that cared about her and her family and her children in a way that was unique and made her feel good about her kids being in school in Deer River. The second thing that I want to share is that this is really about equity, and not just on the systems level between districts that have and don't have this opportunity, but it's an equity issue when we look at students and families, many of whom come with trauma through our doors. And this trauma creates barriers. These barriers can be in attendance, as my colleague will speak about in a second. It can be barriers to engagement. It can be barriers to health. It can be barriers just to enrolling your child in school. And I'll share another story about that. It is not uncommon for us in the fall to have children show up, parents show up with children who don't have birth certificates. That may seem odd to you and I, but the barriers that I'm talking about are there for these families. And so our full-service community school coordinator worked with the county to have someone come and sit at a back-to-school night with a printer and a computer and the capability to print out birth certificates with parents as they came to that night, so those parents could leave with their children enrolled. And this barrier of a birth certificate didn't exist anymore. The achievement gap literature often references the importance of relationships with families and with communities, and many of these families and communities exist in our area for sure, some of whom wouldn't normally open the door for school staff. Our full-service community coordinator is welcomed into those homes because of the trust and because of the relationships that she's built and has been spoken about earlier. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hanson-Ross, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and community members. My name is Morgan Hanson, and I'm a truancy prevention specialist at King Elementary in Deer River, Minnesota. I've had this role in the Itasca County area for 5 years, and two of those years being at King. A teacher told me in one of my earlier years that truancy is a symptom. And quite frankly, I couldn't agree more. When a child doesn't come to school, absences add up and it leads to a student being chronically absent or truant. Deanna Roan, our full service community schools coordinator, wastes no time in digging deeper and finding solutions for the reasons that kids aren't attending school. In Deer River, the common barriers we see include transportation, medical coverage, dental and optical services, lack of food, and homelessness, to name a few. Deanna partners directly with me in order to provide transportation to students who have no other way to get to school. Above and beyond, after hearing that one of our parents did not have the funds to repair her vehicle, Deanna was able to access funding for the parts needed, and high school mechanic students were able to make those repairs. A parent now has a running vehicle the transportation barrier was removed for this family, and the mechanic students were able to learn hands-on. It came full circle. She arranges a healthcare navigator to be on site for families to meet with and set up medical coverage. Because of Deanna, a student was able to receive dental work to fix an issue that had been causing severe headaches and missed days of school. There are students in our building who can clearly see the board in their classrooms and learn the exciting new content because they now have glasses. Deanna implemented a King Pantry where families can get food when in need. Not only that, but culturally, this allows trust and relationships to build. As the homeless liaison, she takes it to the next level in reaching out to resources in order to help our families find a place of safety and belonging. How hard is it to just come to school? Some have asked me. When students and their families face barriers, as I have previously stated, they can feel as though they are standing at the foot of a mountain with no equipment to get them to the top. Deanna provides our families with the equipment disguised as resources in order to make coming to school more routine. Deanna has taken the full service community schools model wholeheartedly, and in short, she sees a void and fills a void. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. And my apologies, we've got a little comma problem up here. I got your last name wrong. Can you just clarify for me, as the truancy prevention specialist, are you employed by the school district, the local police department, the county attorney, county social services, a nonprofit? That role, that title could be approached from a number of different perspectives. And how do you approach it, and who is actually your employer?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually employed by an agency called Ross Resources, hence the last name. Yes. And so we are actually a contracted agency in the schools. So we have truancy prevention specialists that are in all districts that are within the IAS collaborative. And I happen to be the one representing grades K through 5 at King Elementary.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions for our friends from Deer River? Representative Sandstead.
I couldn't let you go without saying something here. I want to make a statement, and then at the end I'll come through with a question. But members, I wish every one of you had the opportunity to go into Superintendent Gross's schools and see the magic truly that is happening in those buildings. It's incredible. I had the opportunity to do that on one day off. I don't know when it was. It was about a year ago. And the first impression that I had was, I can't believe we're still holding school in this building, this outdated, mold-infested, really horrific, horrible description of what somebody calls a building. And yet, kids were happy. The staff is happy. They are meeting the students' needs right where they're at. Superintendent Gross has the ability to create partnerships and buy-in like nobody else I've seen between principals and coordinators and teaching staff and students, and it goes on and on and on. And really, this full-service community school is, again, you're a premier example. I think you probably were one of our original pilot sites. I'm not sure on that, but what you have happening right now is wonderful, wonderful stuff. So congratulations on that, and congratulations on your new position. My loss is going to be my neighboring district's gain. And the one good thing I feel about on this whole thing is kids are going to benefit from this. Kids are going to continue to benefit from this. So congratulations on that. My question, and it's for you, but it's going to be for probably the other superintendents or the other schools representing. If you had one message to us other than, hey, more funding, could you give us more specifics, like what we could be doing as a committee to really enable you to meet the needs of your students in your own districts? Any comment on that would be great.
Superintendent Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Sandstead. I guess if I was going to talk specifically about one thing, schools need flexibility. We need to be able to use our dollars flexibly. And I think an example is a Safe Schools. That program, that funding model, has the ability to fund counselors. It has the ability to fund full-service community school staff, in my opinion. It has the ability to fund hardware and software. It has the ability to fund many, many things that we're talking about today, liaison officers. So I think funding flexibility is really, really important. And we know that Minnesota has a history of being a local control state. And those decisions about full-service community schools, the reason why they all look different is because those decisions are being made locally based on what the community has said its needs are. Our school boards are smart. Our superintendents are smart. We need to have the flexibility to make those decisions locally about how funding's used, and flexibility in funding is key for that.
Thank you. Representative Sandstead, anything else? All right. Thank you very much for coming down today. Hold it. I blew it. Representative Katiza Watoon, my apologies. Don't go too far.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just a comment, and it's for you and for all of our school districts who are able to visit with us today. And thank you, Mr. Chair, and our staff for putting this this presentation together. I, too, was once a second grader little girl who had headaches and couldn't see the board and didn't really understand what was going on at that point in time in my life. So it's really hard to communicate that to your parents when your head hurts and you just don't know why. So I think that the more I learn about these full-service community schools, the more I like it. And I just appreciate you coming and sharing these stories about the impacts that we're having on children all across the state. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Padin. So you
thank you, Matt, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you for leaving at the wee hours of the morning. You must have left at an incredible early moment and saw the sunrise. But thank you so much for making the trip down here and sharing your message. It really resonates with so many of us. And thank you for all your good hard work up there and caring for the whole child, the whole family, the whole community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. St. Paul Dental Services. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Davini and committee members. I am Arianna Riles, the Assistant Director of Children's Dental Services, a nonprofit public health clinic providing free and reduced cost dental care to Minnesota's most vulnerable children over the past 100 years. We provide dental care on site at schools across the state of Minnesota. We see over 3,000 children annually within over a dozen full-service community schools across Minnesota, including in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Brooklyn Center, Duluth, and Deer River, because we find it to be such an exceptional and supportive environment in which to co-locate critically needed services. The needs of a child are multi-layered, and holistic provision of care addressing the whole child is essential for success in school and in life. In these full-service community schools, Children's Dental Services sees over 90% of students with medical assistance and less than 1% who are privately insured. According to the Surgeon General, more than 51 million hours of school time is lost each year due to dental-related illness. The need is great, and full-service community schools help break down many of the barriers to care that students and their families face. The following story demonstrates the incredible support and partnership that Children's Dental Services has with full-service community schools in Minnesota. In partnership with Achievement Plus, which coordinates three full-service community schools in St. Paul, Children's Dental Services saw a student with high dental needs, but due to extreme swelling, could not complete the treatment that same day. The next day, Children's Dental Services was going to be at a different nearby full-service community school. With the help of the Achievement Plus coordinators, who arranged multiple cab rides and worked closely with the student's family to get the student to the site, the student was able to be seen on site for the care they desperately needed and returned to school after the weekend with a whole new excitement for school and without the pain that had been plaguing them. This is just one of hundreds of stories depicting the importance and necessity of full-service community schools for the health and well-being of students. I urge you to continue to support funding for full-service community schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Riels. Any questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Ryan, Brooklyn Center. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ryan. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Seth Ryan. I'm the Director of Community Engagement with Brooklyn Center Community Schools. We are a full-service community school district in the Northwest Metro. Our integrated services focus on educational equity, health, social services, youth and family engagement. It leads to improved student learning, stronger families, and healthier communities, with the schools being the hub of the community. Brooklyn Center Community School has over 100 partners and programs providing services and supports such as before and after school programs, immigration and refugee services, family engagement, social support services, and a school-based community clinic that provides free and low-cost health services for young people in Brooklyn Center. As a full-service community school, our guiding principle is that coordinated, co-located, and culturally relevant services improve the healthcare access, the social emotional needs of each child. Children who are healthy will be able to have a positive social emotional stature and are better positioned for academic success. Our mental health program at our school-based clinic is a highly utilized health service, and the need is much higher than the capacity. As a community school, we strive to provide holistic wraparound services to our students with medical, dental, vision, and mental health support being one of our strongest and most important services offered. A recent example of our work is a student received a free eye exam where he failed, and the ophthalmologist discovered that he was borderline legally blind. After receiving his exam and glasses, he had to relearn all the staff's faces because he wasn't used to seeing them so clearly. This is one of the many stories of success of the work that we do as a community school. The benefits of implementing the community schools model has proven to be successful by bridging the opportunity gap at Brooklyn Center Community Schools. We've maintained a graduation rate above the state average. The percentage of students at Brooklyn Center Secondary are meeting at least one benchmark on the ACT rose from 31% to 40.6%. As we continue to see, we also continue to see declines in negative behavior and an increase in overall attendance for our students. At a recent meeting with our school-based clinic, we had all of our partners share their numbers for the year, and we had over 21,000 individual visits. Now, some of those could have been duplicate, but there are 21 different meetings with students and our partners and our school staff. According to the Journal of School Health, more than 50 million students spend a significant portion of their daily lives in school. This social context is surely one of the most powerful social institutions shaping the next generation of youth. By systematically addressing educational relevant health disparities, schools can reduce both educational and health disparities. But this will not occur efficiently with the current strategy of investment in school health programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Ryan? Thank you very much. And our last presentation for today, Ms. Howard from Minneapolis. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Excuse me. Thank you for allowing the opportunity to speak with you today in support of full service community schools. My name is Patrice Howard. I'm the Executive Director of Community Education for Minneapolis Public Schools, where we have now launched 3 full service community schools and already increasing access to opportunities. As you may be aware, the needs of our students have changed. Many more students are seeking mental health support. More students are experiencing trauma, and homelessness impacts far too many of our school-age children. In fact, at one of our full-service community school sites, over 22% of our pre-K through fifth grade students experience homelessness. The Wilders Foundation of Homelessness in 2018 showed the highest number of homeless people ever surveyed. Most troubling in their data was the fact that 46% of homeless individuals are children or young people up to the age 24. And those who do not have access to an emergency shelter or family crisis center was up 62% since 2015. This is just one aspect of what the current student experience is. Schools must be equipped to work with students who have needs beyond academics, and we have to think beyond what most consider of schools today as serving a single purpose, where teachers teach and students learn. In order to impact the learning space, in order to impact the learning space and the student experience, schools must be equipped to reduce barriers to learning. Some of those barriers I referenced previously. Utilizing public schools as hubs, community schools bring together community partners to offer a range of supports and opportunities to youth, families, and communities. In Minneapolis, we begin to scale our systems of support. We seek to bridge resources between partnerships, such as health access via the School-Based Health Alliance and Children's Dental Clinic, and enrichment opportunities via Minneapolis Parks and Recreation and Ignite After School. The opportunities are limitless, and that's because of our full-time, full-service community school coordinators, the key ingredient of building a thriving community school system. This work cannot be effectively and efficiently implemented without the support of this key staff person. I can attest to this, as I had the amazing opportunity to once lead the work for Brooklyn Center Community Schools, where we maintained over 100 partnerships that responded to the needs of the school community via partnership coordination. I also have the fortunate opportunity of serving on the Coalition for Community Schools Leadership Network, where I've seen the success of models across the country, and right here in Minnesota, where a total of 6 districts have fully implemented the model and continue to see positive outcomes as it relates to supporting the needs of the whole child. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your support on behalf of Minneapolis Public Schools and all supporters of Full Service Community School Model. Your work is truly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. We have a question from Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Howard. I've heard about your excellent work both in Minneapolis and in Brooklyn Center, I guess, before then, and appreciate you being here today. I think around the table there's certainly interest and even enthusiasm for the work that full-service community schools with school-linked services being available. But we haven't talked very much about what it costs to do that. There have been some references to funding, but I wonder if you could talk about your experience both at Brooklyn Center, maybe in Minneapolis, about how you're paying for the additional management and implementation of the program. How much does it cost? And how do you anticipate maintaining the support for the great work that you and others are doing?
Ms. Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for that question. I would say, and I'm speaking on behalf of my experience with the work, about $100,000 or so to support the coordinator. That includes the salary and the fringe benefits. That does not include any additional needs that may come about depending on that need of the community. We're able to pay for it currently in Minneapolis through a federal grant, a full service community schools grant, as well as a partnership with Minneapolis Parks and Recreation on behalf of the city of Minneapolis. And we hope to continue to sustain the work through partnership coordination and collaboration with others as far as leveraging resources. This is one way that we seek to scale and then really relying on our state partners to identify additional funding resources so we can scale across the state. Thank you.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the work. I'm very interested in pursuing it as others are, and I hope to talk to you later. Thank you. Thanks.
Ms. Howard, and if anybody else who's spoken today wants to get in on it as well, I'll take the risk of inviting them. It seems that the theme of the day when I hear folks in schools talk is closing the gaps in basic needs. I think it was Superintendent Gross who started with the bottom of the Maslow's hierarchy, that it's about connecting people with housing, it's health care, it's food, dental care, and so on. Am I reading that correctly, given your experience in both Brooklyn Center and Minneapolis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, absolutely. We all know that there are a number of needs that young people face every day. However, those school sites may lack the coordination to really meet the needs of those identified needs of the young person or that school community. So really it is about coordination of resources. So one of my colleagues up here today talked about being the matchmaker between resources and needs. And so that's really what it's about, identifying those assets that's really going to support the student learning experience and really responded to the needs of the whole child. We know that a healthy young person is in position to succeed. And so one way of really supporting that young person in the classroom is responding to their basic needs.
Thank you. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't know if you just wanted general comments now or afterwards.
Ms. Howard, you're lucky. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say, just from all the testifiers up here, and especially listening to the students and how much this means for them to be able to not only have access for these basic needs, but to help them with their academic time and career. And actually, we have something in a model before us that actually directly impacts the opportunity gap. And I just would ask the chair as we move forward, and I know a lot of us around the table feel the same way, that we look at programs like this and how we fund that to make sure that we're tackling and funding in things that actually work and work immediately for kids right now, as we heard from the students today.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I have the nurse from Mayo come back up?
Ms. Allen, you're still in the room, I trust? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Allen, I'm going to switch gears on you here pretty quick because you're in the room. Okay.
All right.
We at the legislature here are very much concerned about how things are going with the COVID-19 virus. You as a school nurse, have you gotten the resources you need and for your population you're going to be dealing with? Or how do you feel right now about that?
Ms. Allen?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your question. At this time, I'm very comfortable with the community collaboration that we have in Olmsted County. The school district, Mayo Clinic, Olmsted Medical Center are all working together for this COVID-19. Again, independently we can't do it alone, but together there's multiple efforts going on for emergency preparedness planning for what may come our way.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. On top of everything you do, and you get hard curveballs thrown at you with something like this, I really appreciate that. I'm married to a nurse, so I have to say this on the record. So. But realistically, I know what you go through, and so I really appreciate all your hard work. And I was able to go with the chair. You can't, Cheryl. Anyways, we went and saw the. I'm having a hard day, we were able to. Visit one of your community schools in Rochester, and we were so impressed with how everybody worked down there. And that young man that came up, watch out, legislators, that guy's going to take over our seat. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Allen.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have any data on the improvements in achievement in regard to these community schools? Do we have any data on that?
Does anyone in the audience have data? I mean, I'm sure we have access to it. We don't have it here today, Representative Erickson. But if anybody in the audience has anything they want to lift up on the experience in their school district, keep you on your toes. If you wish to come down. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ms. Burr, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'll be brief because you don't want to hear from me. But Mr. Chair, committee members, I would just like to say, in addition to the ones coming down, that most of the groups represented here today definitely do have data that we can get you and provide to you even after the committee if we need to.
Okay. So thank you, Ms. Burr. Gentlemen, you choose which goes first. Just introduce yourself for the record and proceed then, please.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for allowing me opportunity to talk here. I am John Solomon. I am an 11-year school board member from Oakland Center here. And one of the things I've been listening, and everybody's been really diligent about giving the information about, you know, some of the needs of our schools. I guess to me, and sometimes people get a little overwhelmed with it, but my background is more in social services and as a therapist here. And one of the things that I find, and especially in our particular school district here, because of the demographics of the families that live here, whatever, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't kind of have a conversation a bit about why we're at this point in the need of these particular services and the funding to be able to maintain here. You know, we've had, and I've dealt with it there, having worked for the county, but we've had about two or three good generations of this issues that have led us to this point where we're in such a need to deal with these children and their families. We children, but in community schools, we treat the whole families here, and that's the important aspect to understand. We're not just reaching out to the children, but we're reaching back to some of these families, and when we're dealing with 2 to 3 generations of mothers, grandmothers that have dealt with the things that I'm sure that some of you veteran legislators have seen us go through, this war on drugs, war on crime type things that have led us to the point where a lot of these communities have been ravaged by the different effects of those things. And so what you've got, you know, in response is you're dealing with a couple generations of parents and grandparents that the education system failed them as well here, and now we're trying to rebuild with the children we're dealing with now here, and we cannot do that unless we're treating the whole family. That's why we deal with so many different partner services and things in our schools. We're handling mental health issues. Of course, we're dealing with the things such as dental and vision and things like that that help the children be able to maintain in school. But if we don't tell you how we reach out outside of that and bring families in and do parenting type things, we have groups that we talk to these guys about teaching them how to help their child with their homework and things. If you got a grandmother and a mother that the school system didn't get them to the point to where they understand those things, then how can they possibly help their children here? And a lot of people deal with a lot of trauma as an effect of that here. And so that's why we have to have the proper funding to be able to get those services in. And as a community, when we say community schools, we're talking about the whole community here. And I think that's what I wanted to emphasize here, is that why it's so important that we be able to continue to maintain that. Because, you know, like I said, with the demographics and Minnesota being one that we're very open to our different families coming in, but we've got a lot of immigrant families and a lot of other families that we're trying to combine in those environments and make sure we meet the needs of everybody here. And we can't do that unless we're not just dealing with the children's issues, but we've got to deal with the parents' issues as well. When we say community, we're talking about everybody. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to just kind of give you that.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. I have a standing disagreement with those who in education try to isolate the student.
Yeah.
And my consistent point is you can't separate the child from their family or their family from their community.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, the other thing I wanted to add on that, if I could, is that we also do a lot of work, and especially with some of our partner agencies, in that we are doing work with the youth, the students, and be able to have improved relationships with the teachers. We've got a lot of newer teachers coming in, and they mean well. But I know that you've heard that you're hearing on education, a lot of teachers want to leave the profession because they're getting disillusioned by the behaviors and things like that. Well, that's what we're doing in community schools. We're trying to teach children how to have better relationships with the teachers, and the teachers how to have a better understanding, especially when we talk about culture and things like that, that they all understand each other, so that we understand that we're all working for the same thing and trying to get there.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon.
Thank you.
Sir, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much for this time. My name is Matt Ruzek, principal at Riverside Central Elementary School, full-service community school in Rochester, Minnesota. And to speak specifically to the question in regards to growth and data, we've seen a significant growth. Recently, we've just looked at retention rates of our students. We have a hyper-focused lens on attendance this year. Across our year, month by month, we've seen roughly a 20% increase in student attendance, which is unbelievably successful. And then what we've noticed is that we've desegregated our data to look at our students who do stay with us for first through fifth grade. Our students that stay with us first through fifth grade outperform their peers across the board in math, reading, social studies, science, whatever you're looking at. So more time served with us, and really with the community school, what we're starting to see is, for my school in particular, we have students who are asking to open enroll, to return to our school. If you've ever served or worked in a building like mine, that's not been the common case. We have families that move out of our zone and then are bringing their children back. So that to me is data that stands out unbelievably. That's just looking at standardized data, and we know that our standardized form of exam certainly does not tell the picture of our students. When we start to look at formative assessment and we start to look at health data, those are all things that we have seen a significant increase in as we've watched this over the course of 4 years. And who knows, if we appropriately fund it, what we can do in the next four.
Thank you, Mr. Ruzick. Representative Erickson, other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm wondering if MDE has data, but they can provide that for us later. But Mr. Chair and committee, I hope that no school separates children from their families. I think even if they're not a community school, that I have observed in the districts I have visited, that family is very important to the success of the child. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Sandstein.
This might be a Mr. Strom question, or anybody else wants to comment on it. I'm wondering, as full service community schools do the assessment of their schools and their communities, they identify the needs particular to their site or their community. My question is, do they then provide some kind of a report to the state in terms of Superintendent Gross's community needs these types of services, or these are the issues that bubble up? Rochester has these issues that bubble up. So more as a practice, or for informational purposes to the legislature, that we can see maybe common threads that are appearing across the state. I think we are hearing here things like food insecurity, mental health issues. I do know that no two schools are identical, but if there's common threads, I think sometimes symptoms appear in schools. We see those, and that might help us as a legislature not only try to address it through an education committee, but have even a bigger vision about statewide, we need to be looking at certain things. So I'm just wondering if there is a report or some kind of information there that we could use.
Mr. Strom, it looks like Mr. Ooney is throwing himself between you and this question. Mr. Ooney, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your
Mr.
testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandstein, I will obviously always defer to Mr. Strom if he has additional information, but I know in the legislation that has passed, recipients are required to do a baseline analysis of what their community needs are and match that to their community plan. And as with all grants, we do require follow-up reporting to see how expenditures match up with any plans that are required under those grant programs. So I know we do have some reporting back on that. I'm not familiar at this point with what exactly is contained in those reports. I was actually in the middle of sending an email to my team to see what information I could procure. I was looking on the full service community schools webpage and didn't find any reports there, which is not uncommon for us not to put those reports back on grants on our front facing webpage, but I can certainly investigate that with our team to see what we have. But I'll defer to Mr. Strom for any other information he has.
Nope. Thank you very much. Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I don't want to, ask for more of a requirement on reporting, et cetera. However, if that data could be gathered and we could see, is this a statewide issue? Is it a regional issue? Is it, or are there regional issues that might help us as we get a limited funding target and then know maybe how to best allocate funds to address the most imminent needs that areas are facing? Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've spoken with representatives from Washington County about the ideas that have been discussed today, and they've told me that many of the services that are necessary for children or provided for children come through the counties. I wonder if there's anyone who testified today or anyone else in the audience who has found the relationship or the school district relationship with counties particularly useful, helpful, and effective.
Thank you both very much. Please introduce yourself to the tape and respond.
Chairman and committee. My name is Deanna Roan. I'm the full service community school coordinator in Deer River, Minnesota. I've had my position for about a year and a half. And one of the things that I've found most important is my building of partnerships with others. And I have a very strong partnership with the Itasca County. Several of their people sit on my leadership committee. I have the public health nurse who sits on my committee. I have the head of social services who sits on my committee. I have another nurse. And through those partnerships, just yesterday, Itasca County Public Health wrote us a grant for $7,800, or requested a grant for $7,800 that we received so that we could get a vision screener that our nurse needed to screen before we were able to purchase that. We had to borrow one, and so we'd have to set up a time to go pick it up and come back. And so we've been able to, with our partnerships, have other people write grants for us and bring resources into our district that we don't have. And so it's very important to have those relationships with, like, the county nurse and those kind of things. We couldn't do our job without the partnerships that we are building with others.
That's interesting to hear, because we often hear from smaller Minnesota districts the challenge they face in they don't have a grant writer who's available. And so when the legislature structures things as grants, we say, oh, here, go, you know, just apply for a grant, and they say, you don't get it. So having partners who have that capability, that capacity.
It was a very good partnership that has really benefited our district to work with Itasca County, and they're very willing to write grants for us.
Very good. Ms. Tappa.
Yes, again, thank you, Chair and committee members. Rachel Tappa from Duluth. We also have a strong partnership with St. Louis County Public Health. When I first started as a coordinator several years ago, we collaborated with the SHIP program, Statewide Health Improvement Partnership, so doing things related to food, to nutrition and safe routes to school, physical activity, had some experience with that. We also have public health involved as doing guest speaking and presentations in our school, so they're Substance Abuse Prevention and Intervention program has been involved. The crisis text line presentations have been provided. We have access to data through the county and a good relationship there, which is informative for our work. And actually, speaking to the grant, there's an AmeriCorps Vista member with St. Louis County Public Health who actually helped me write a grant for our school food pantry for the Essentia. We were encouraged to apply for a grant for the Healthy Schools Challenge through Essentia Health. We just submitted that. And then one additional thing is with, as we are looking at trauma, and that's been referenced a few times, it's in our community, in our broader collective impact work, which the county is involved in, there's an action team looking at addressing community awareness and readiness to respond to trauma. So I'm part of that team along with folks from the county and other agencies. One other thing, we had a public health nurse, and she's no longer in that position, but who was working on youth mental health, who collaborated with us with our alternative to suspension program, doing some restorative circles during our school day, as well as an after-school mindfulness program. And this is maybe to speak to the question about data too. I don't have current academic data for our middle school, but looking at leading indicators, things like attendance and discipline. We last year, after becoming a restorative practice school, implementing alternatives to suspension and some other social emotional learning, we had a 50% reduction in days of out of school suspension, which I believe would lead to eventually improved academic outcomes. And that is work that is happening within our school, but the community school piece of that is bringing in partners like public health and like Menace Peacemakers and others to I guess have that be a more, not just a school effort, but a community effort as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tappa. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Anyone else with that? Oh, Ms. Hedlund, my apologies. Actually, Ms. Headland, I've make yourself comfortable by all means. We need to gavel in because we've not done that yet.
Okay.
We got started early and haven't done that, so I thought we'd gavel in quickly before we gavel out. And at the demand of staff, Representative Murphy, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Sure.
To which I want to respond, don't call me Shirley, but.
I move that we adopt the minutes as printed.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Murphy motion? Seeing none. Representative Sandell.
I have taken a look at the minutes as well,
yes.
Mr. Chair, and I want to tell my Republican friends that I found them complete, comprehensive, and in this case, accurate.
A high bar.
It's just an inside joke to some people over here who have noticed my my mistake in my presentation yesterday on the floor.
Ah. All right. All in favor of the Murphy motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Ms. Headland, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Shauna Headland. Thank you, committee, for hearing me. I'm going to attempt to very briefly put on two different hats. I'm the director of school-based clinics for Minnesota Community Care, a federally qualified healthcare center that provides care inside of 10 St. Paul high schools. And I'm also the president of the Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance. And I wanted to quickly address a few questions that were offered here today, starting with one potential funding mechanism for sustainability. Startup funding for healthcare provided in the schools is challenging. Full service community schools is an amazing way to facilitate that expansion and startup. For continuation of services, those healthcare providers can rely upon third party billing, and they largely do in the state of Minnesota. There's opportunities to bill insurance, there's opportunities to bill Medicaid inside of school-based health centers inside of Minnesota schools. And likewise, there are funding mechanisms at the county level to provide support for uncompensated care in a number of our school-based health centers across Minnesota. And those inside of full-service community schools do rely upon those grants for uncompensated care, and they are third-party billers. It's a huge step forward for sustainability. Federally qualified healthcare centers, there's 17 of them across Minnesota. Four of them provide healthcare inside of full service community schools or otherwise. They are also looking for opportunities to expand the care that they provide in terms of mental health care, medical care, preventive care, and dental care, optometry, chiropractic, integrated care. Lastly, you brought up COVID-19, and I just wanted to highlight full service community schools and their healthcare partners as a huge opportunity there, because we largely provide preventive care, which means we are seeing well students. As we approach something like a pandemic, we think about infection control and how to make sure sick people can have access without getting others sick. And inside of schools, kids are largely well, right? They come to school largely healthy. And so that's a big opportunity in a response like this to identify a place where kids can get the care they need and continue, especially mental health care, without being exposed to a virus.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if my question will be for the current testifier or okay. Somebody else. I would like help in understanding the logistics of how this all works in our community schools. So we've got mental health, dental, regular health care, social services, and so on, all in one central spot. So my questions are, how does this work? So a child can get services potentially during the school day, maybe. I'm just wondering if parent permission to go to the dentist or go to the doctor or go for mental health is, does the parent have to give permission first? My second question, and I should I mm-hmm. wait? Should I ask the first?
Oh, one. You're on a roll.
Okay, I'm on a roll. My second, and I'm trying to grasp how this works. My second question is, in schools that don't have the room, for example, in Albert Lea, we have four elementary schools. They are crammed full in their classrooms right now. There's no room to bring in other services. So how does that work for schools that don't have the room in their buildings? So two unrelated questions, but just curious on the workings of how these schools work that way.
Ms. Hedlund, do you want to start with the questions about accessing your services inside schools and your school-based clinics? That's how I understood Representative Bennett's first question.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and also if parent permission is gained before the child gets those services.
Part of the access. Ms. Hedlund?
Yes, and I will answer from the healthcare provider perspective, and then it'd be also good to hear from the educator's perspective on that. And healthcare provided anywhere is regulated by the same laws that regulate healthcare anywhere, which means that primary care, dental care, those kinds of services are accessed for students based on parent consent. And so the same parent consent laws that regulate healthcare anywhere apply in a school-based setting as well. And then the second part of your question, I think we're getting very creative. What we see in Minnesota, what we see across the nation, is access to telehealth care that's sometimes coordinated through a school nurse. We have nurse practitioners that wear backpacks and provide care inside of classrooms or any little corner. We can provide care inside of a school. Even dental care can be done in very small spaces. So we're getting more and more creative about not relying upon too much infrastructure inside of a school building.
Superintendent Gross, thank you for coming down. Thank you, Ms. Hedlund.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair and committee members. I would concur with Ms. Hedlund's response that consent is always key. Student privacy is always going to be maintained. And flexibility, and from time to time, we might do things different. So using dental as an example, we have worked with our transportation provider, our local dentist, to get kids from school to the dentist and back. We've also had dental work done in the school building. So whatever we need at the time and whichever partner is most going to work the best, we've made those adjustments. And in terms of space, I think that in most schools, you'd find that space is a premium and people get really, really creative about that. Sometimes that means a closet. Sometimes that means a room where somebody might be out on a prep period and you're barging into their space while they're gone. It might be reallocation, those kinds of things. So I guess that, if you'll indulge me for a second, I think to the question about data, I think one of the things that in education is important to always remember is that teachers are doing one of the most complex jobs on the planet. That's my opinion. And to try to boil down improvement to one particular thing is really, really hard, because at the same time, we're improving opportunity and meeting kids' physical needs. We're also improving our pedagogical practices in the classroom. And we don't want to isolate any of those things, because that means stopping really good practices. And I use the example sometimes that it's like prevention work. We don't know how many cases of the flu shot prevents. The only way to know would be to stop giving it. And so we can't really measure very well how well-fed students do, because we feed them, and the only way to compare that to anything would be to not feed them and see how they do. And so we're in the business of meeting these needs. We're going to meet the needs because we know it's the right thing to do, and include that in a comprehensive approach to improving what happens in the classroom between the teacher and the student, improving the kind of student and how the student is when they get to that classroom. All those things have to happen at the same time, and stopping any of those things to isolate it would be like, you know, the study that's happening with China right now and their response to COVID-19. People are looking at how are they on the backside of this. Well, there's really no way to study that precisely, because they were doing five different approaches at the same time, because it was all good pandemic response practice. And nobody would want to say, let's just do this one thing, because in the meantime, the thing could spiral out of control. So we're working on all these things at the same time, trying to support what's an incredibly, incredibly difficult and complex profession, and that's teaching.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Bennett, any follow-up?
Good, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha. Oh, my apologies.
Back up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're running up against the clock, so I'll be brief. But as I was listening to you, so we have schools where we're trying to do this in closets because of space. We're obviously trying. So I'm listening to all this, and we have to put together a statewide system where we already have uneven revenues. Compensatory is, you know, we had reports about that. And I listened to all this and the building needs. And now we have teachers that could be making sure kids get to their dental appointment or getting to their throughout the day, I'm assuming all that stuff. How do we get there? What's the price tag and how do we get to that system? And can we? I mean, we're talking about some very large referendums. You know, there's one thing about trying to put this together and having wonderful ideals, but can we get there?
Superintendent Gross.
Right. Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm not in a position to be able to speculate on the cost. That would be astronomical because I know that even in one of my school districts, Nashua-Keewatin, Representative Sandsteed mentioned the facilities there. I have two buildings that are over 100 years old, and they are in trouble. So how do we prioritize in a situation like that? Do we prioritize around people? Do we prioritize around buildings when we know that both are important? I think it starts with what are our priorities as a state, what are our priorities as a legislature, what do we believe is the most important, how do we rank those needs. It's impossible for me to think about what we do every day in education without thinking about basic human needs, making sure kids are fed. So we have a scenario in our state where and it gets plenty of press about students being turned away, and I know there's an anti-shaming bill and all that stuff. If we were feeding every kid when they walked in the door, that conversation wouldn't be happening. And should every kid have a meal when they get to school? Absolutely. Knowing where their food comes from shouldn't be something on kids' mind, and ultimately they're the ones that end up in the lunch line, not their parents, where sometimes the challenges are. So I think we can look at this hierarchy as a simple starting place of going, what are our students' basic needs? And again, can I rattle off a litany of research to say, well, if we make sure that kids are fed, have clean clothes, and have a shower, can I tell you that these are the research studies that will support that those children will do better in school? I can't off the top of my head. I just know as a human being that a kid can't walk into a school where they don't feel safe, full, clothed, and clean, and expect them to learn. I just know that. And so it all comes back to what are our priorities going to be as a state and as a legislature, and sometimes we have to find those places where things are working best and copy those. And this is where that dynamic, I think, between local control and building some stiff systems gets interesting, because at some point you want to be able to look at systems that are established and criteria that are working for success, like why did this work in this particular community, and you want to be able to replicate those pieces. And we've been a part of that in Deer River in a number of different in actions where we created a system that wasn't necessarily replicable somewhere else because there wasn't enough thought put into the guidelines that created the structure in the first place. So where is it working the best? What are our kind of gut human priorities, and starting from there? But as far as an overall cost, it's a lot.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you. And with that, thank you very much. You've articulated, I mean, we have to sit in here, and Mr. Strum, can you tell me where astronomical is on our sheets and how we find it? I'll leave it at that.
Lower right-hand corner. You know, Representative Crescia, you raise a solid philosophical question. I can certainly say, speaking for this House majority, it's clear today from the testimony, it's not news, but it's clear today that we as a state, we as a country, do a lousy job of making sure that every child and every family has their basic needs met. We've got real needs for across the state for more affordable housing. That's not the primary responsibility of this committee, but we know that students who are homeless do worse in school, and that coordinating then between the school and housing providers can be key to closing those racial gaps. We know that there are too many hungry kids and families in our state, and that, again, coordinating between those stepping in the gap of food insecurity and families is a role that schools can play. We know that there are too many without health insurance and access to health care. We've got a potential pandemic coming, and we've got hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans without access to health care, and parents who can't take a day, paid day off of work to take care of a child or themselves if they do become ill. We're not doing a good job of meeting the basic needs of Minnesota children and families. Some of that work is inside this hearing room during this time period. Some of it is outside. But certainly, you know, Superintendent Gross is right. We know that a kid who is stably housed, well-fed, has access to health care, is going to do better in school. And full-service community schools are a way of helping to step into those gaps. With that, members, thank you for the day. To the testifiers who've come from across the state, thank you very much for being here today and sharing your experiences and insights. With that, members, we are adjourned.